Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and tonight's conversation is with Patrick Schombeck, Assistant Director, Office of Science and Technology, and Chief Information Officer of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. What are some of the most pressing technology challenges facing ATF today?
Well, there certainly are a number of them. First of all, is to continue to fund our infrastructure. I talked a little bit earlier about the importance of infrastructure and how our organization views it, and that's an expensive proposition. So one of the challenges is to find the funds to continue to support that, and at the same time, have discretionary money for the new developments that need to occur in the organization. Second challenge is recruiting and retention, and I know we'll talk a little bit more about that, but technical and scientific personnel are becoming harder and harder to come by, and that's what my office is all about. And part of my responsibility is making sure we can continue to support those functions. Cybersecurity and infrastructure protection, an obvious one in the way things are under attack these days. And there are certainly elements out there who don't want our organization to be successful at what we do. And so we're always on someone's target list for one reason or another. And then we're coming up, as I mentioned, our desktop outsourcing, we're coming up on the 3-year refresh of that technology. And that presents another set of challenges and decisions to be made for us.
Well, you just mentioned the importance of attracting IT workers in a tight labor market. How do you go about doing that?
Well, Paul, I frankly believe that money is not the only motivator of attracting and retaining employees, and nor is it the primary motivator for a lot of people. I think a belief and an affiliation in the mission of the organization probably tops a lot of people's list. So if there's things that I can do to make our employees have a stronger sense of belonging to our organization and where they fit in and the promise that they bring to the future and try to build that confidence in our employees, I think that strengthens their attachment and their commitment to the organization. At the same time, we can't ignore the financial side, and I can't allow the gap between government and private industry to continue to widen. And we're taking steps there as well. We're early adopters within Treasury of authority that we got recently for the law enforcement bureaus to enter into a pay demonstration project. And it's essentially an exemption from the Title V pay restrictions that exist for most federal organizations and the normal GS, general schedule pay plan that exists. And it includes, in our case, a pay banding scheme where employees are grouped in bands of pay rather than in the 15 discrete general schedule grades that existed in the old system. And it's also a pay-for-performance scheme in that their pay is directly impacted by their performance evaluation at the end of each period. It also gives us the ability to hire someone into the organization at a higher rate than the general plan used to, and also to accelerate someone in pay faster than the old system used to as well. And then once they're on board, we have various bonuses under the plan, recruitment bonuses, retention bonuses, relocation bonuses, education bonuses, a number of authorities that we've built into the pay demonstration project. So generally, it gives us more pay flexibility and the ability to act more like a business when it comes to salary and other financial remedies.
Does it help close the gap? If the right bonuses were provided and the right choices are made as the bands, will the gap be closed?
I certainly think it does, and I think our employees would agree. Of the 400 or so employees that were eligible for the pay plan in our bureau, we had over a 97% voluntary participation rate. So I certainly think that people recognize it as a start to closing that gap.
And is it too early to tell how quickly people can move through the pay bands? I think one of the issues that comes up around IT workers is they find themselves trained in a hot skill and are lured away by potentially large increases in salary. And I'm wondering if you'd be able to do that.
Right.
As well.
It is a little early for us. We're just our first year into the plan. We do have recent examples, however, of retention bonuses, where employees have come in with offers in hand from other organizations that we've been able to match or at least come close enough to encourage them to continue staying with our organization.
And you indicated it's a demonstration project, so it has not been rolled out widely? Or?
Well, that means it has a definite time frame to it. In our case, it's a 3-year project, and we're in actually the second year of the authority, but the first year of implementation. So in another year, we'll be seeking the approval to perhaps extend it and go on into the future with it, or to possibly broaden it to a larger segment of the population.
Is it just at ATF?
Right now, the authority exists in three bureaus, Customs, Secret Service, and ATF, but we're the only ones who have implemented it so far. And it's limited to scientific and technical positions within those bureaus.
How are technologists at ATF able to get training in new technologies to stay abreast of what's going on?
Actually, that's one example with the Treasury CIO Council I spoke about earlier, where we are trying to consolidate our efforts and team together with what our training needs are and driving some of the prices down. It's an expensive proposition to put IT workers through the training. And while we rely on contractors for a lot of our very specialized expertise, there's a limit on how far you really can stretch that risk. We have to have at least a certain percentage of people within the government ranks that are trained in these technologies as well. So we're trying to consolidate basically with the other bureaus within the Treasury and force some of the prices down. And we're also committed this year across the entire department to trying to spend 3% of our IT dollars in training, allocated directly for that purpose. That's a higher percentage than we've ever been able to achieve, but something that all the bureau CIOs are committed to trying to achieve this year.
When you think about the future of ATF, what do you think will be the major challenges that the Bureau will face?
Well, I think, first of all, we're facing more sophisticated criminals with more sophisticated schemes in the future. We're already seeing ways that technology is being used by the bad guys against us as an organization. So we're having to develop a whole pool of talent in computer-based crime solvers, people with the skills to deal with not only the traditional crime, but once you insert technology into how that crime is committed, are we able to unravel that and approve a case? On a broader scale, when you think about alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, it's hard to think of any other three products with which Americans have more of a love-hate relationship. Everything we do as an organization is scrutinized and in many cases criticized by one side of that issue or another. So I think the broader issue and challenge that faces the Bureau is to uphold our responsibilities under the law and not to be swayed by opinion of, you know, whether laws should be supported or not supported. Our job isn't to pass the laws. Our job is to enforce the laws that are part of our jurisdiction.
And what advice would you give future CIOs or the next group of CIOs coming up through the ranks in terms of what they should be doing now, thinking about and learning to be more effective?
There's no doubt they need to know about technology and keep ways in mind of how they're going to stay abreast of technology. They also need to have a sense of what the organization is trying to accomplish and hopefully be a major player in trying to mold that direction of where the organization is headed in the future. And I think back to my issue of being optimistic that I mentioned earlier. I think a lot of the challenge of looking at the future and taking an organization in a direction is having the optimism that our best efforts are going to achieve something. They're going to get us in some ways toward the goal that we've set for ourselves. And optimism is contagious with people. You know, employees begin to believe that we really can do this. And if the employees believe in it, then you can do it, because that's the only way an organization makes progress is through its people.
And how about, what advice would you offer to somebody perhaps entering the job market now, given a choice between, say, perhaps going to work for government, maybe even ATF, or some other place? How would you counsel them to think about perhaps a choice between a public sector career and a private sector career?
Yeah, actually, I get that question quite a bit from young people who are looking at possible federal careers. And I have to counsel them that there is certainly a lot of satisfaction in public service. And there are few organizations where you get the level of responsibility that you do at as young an age as you do often in the federal sector, where financial gains might be higher in the private sector. The level of responsibility and the ability to really impact an organization, I think, comes a lot sooner in a career for a public servant than someone in the private sector. You may wait an entire career for the opportunity to really be a decision maker in the private sector, where it can happen much more quickly.
Well, I'm afraid we're out of time, Patrick. I want to thank you for spending so much time with us this evening. I've enjoyed our conversation very much.
Thank you, Paul. So have I.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, Conversation with Government Leaders. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers and the co-chair of the PricewaterhouseCoopers Endowment for the Business of Government. To learn more about the endowment's programs and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness, visit us on the web at endowment.pwcglobal.com. See you next week.